Clinton and Trenaire and Reyno have never understood why I love these people so, the Archbishop thought now, his eyes sweeping the mist-shrouded, snow-covered mountains. Their ideal is what Reyno gets in Harchong, serfs, beaten-down people who know their place. Kinnear's face hardened. They like knowing their flocks aren't going to get uppity, aren't going to argue with their secular and temporal masters, aren't going to start thinking for themselves, wondering why it is that Mother Church is so incredibly wealthy and powerful while her children starve, aren't going to start demanding the princes of Mother Church remember that they serve God, and not the other way around. Kinnear knew the vast majority of his fellow prelates had never understood why he insisted on making two lengthy pastoral visits to his archbishopric every year, instead of the one grudging flying visit per year most of them made. The fact that he voluntarily spent the winter in Glacierheart, away from the amenities of the temple, the diversions of Zion, the political maneuvering and alliance building which were so central to the vicarate's existence, had always amused them. Oh, one or two of them realized how he'd come to love the spectacular beauty, the cragginess of towering mountains, snowcaps, and dense evergreen forests. Waterfalls that tumbled for hundreds of feet through lacy banners of spray. The deep, icy, cold lakes fed by the high mountain glaciers from which the province took its name. A few others, mostly men he'd known in seminary when he'd been far younger, knew of his long-standing interest in geology, the way he'd always loved studying God's handiwork in the bones of the world, his pleasure in spelunking, and the hushed cathedral stillness he'd found in deep caverns and caves. Yet even the ones who knew about those sides of his nature, who could dimly grasp what a man like him might see in an archbishopric like his, still found his preference for Glacierheart and his lengthy visits to its uncouth country bumpkin inhabitants difficult to understand. It was so eccentric, so quaint. They'd never understood the way he drew strength and sustenance from the faith which burned so brightly here in Glacierheart. Nor had they ever understood that the people of Glacierheart, nobles, such as they were and what there were of them, and commoners alike, knew he genuinely cared about them. Those other archbishops and those vicars didn't worry about such minor matters. Even the best of them, far too often, considered that they'd done their jobs and more by keeping tithes within survivable bounds, seeing to it that enough other priests were sent to their archbishoprics to keep their churches and their priories filled, making certain their bishop executors weren't skimming too much off their parishioners. They were no longer village priests. God had called them to greater and more important duties in the administration of his church, and there were plenty of other priests who could supply the pastoral care they no longer had time to give. Which is precisely how this entire business in Karras managed to take all of them so completely by surprise, Kinnear thought grimly. He shook his head, eyes hard on the horizon, harder than the ice and snow upon which they gazed. The idiots, the fools, they sneer at efforts to reform Mother Church because she's working just fine for them, for their families, for their power, and for their purses. And if she's working for them, then, obviously, she must be working for everyone else, or for everyone else who matters at least. Because they're right. They aren't priests anymore. And they don't even realize what an abomination in God's eyes a bishop or a vicar becomes when he forgets that first, last, and always he's a pastor, a shepherd, a protector and teacher. When he gives up his priesthood in the name of power. He made himself step back from the anger, made himself draw a deep breath, then gave himself a shake and turned away from the window. He crossed to the fireplace, opened the screen, and used the tongs to position a couple of fresh lumps of coal on the grate. He listened to the sudden, fierce crackling sound as the flame explored the surfaces of the new fuel and stood warming his hands for a few moments. Then he replaced the screen, walked back to his desk, and seated himself behind it. He knew the real reason his anger against the corruptors of Mother Church turned so easily into a white-hot fury these days, crackling and roaring up like the flames on his grate. And he knew his anger was no longer the simple product of outrage. No, it was rather more pointed and much more personal now. He closed his eyes, traced the sign of the scepter across his chest, and murmured yet another brief, heartfelt prayer for his friends in Zion, for the other members of the circle who he'd been forced to leave behind. He wondered if Samuel Wilson had discovered the traitor's identity. Had he uncovered the deadly weakness in the walls of the circle's fortress? Or was he still guessing, still forced to keep his knowledge to himself, lest Clinton realize he knew what was coming and strike even more quickly and more ruthlessly? "I shouldn't say it, Lord," the Archbishop thought, "but thank you for sparing me Samuel's burden. I ask you to be with him and protect him and all of my brothers. If they can be saved, then I ask you to save them, because I love them, and because they are such good men and love you so dearly. Yet you are the master builder of all this world. You alone know the true plan of your work. And so, in the end, what I ask most is that you will strengthen me in the days to come, and help me to be obedient to whatever plan you have."